You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the CDC announced yesterday that people vaccinated against COVID-19 no longer have to wear masks in most public settings. A doctor joins us to talk about the new guidance and what still needs to be done to move past the pandemic. Now, at least 16 states have announced they will end pandemic unemployment benefits months ahead of schedule. That includes benefits that allow gig workers to collect unemployment compensation and that give recipients an extra $300 a week. The benefits are scheduled to end on September 6th. The plans in states would move the timeline up to mid-June or July. A Washington Post analysis finds the move could impact close to 2 million people in Republican-led states around the country. Here in Wisconsin, business groups like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce are urging Governor Tony Evers to do the same. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you getting unemployment benefits right now? Have you collected the additional unemployment benefits during the COVID pandemic? If you are a gig worker, were you able to collect, or a self-employed person, were you able to collect benefits that you wouldn't have been able to in the past? If you're a business owner, what's it been like trying to find employees? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Jamila Michener is an associate professor in the Department of Government at Cornell University. Her research focuses on poverty, racial inequality, and public policy in the U.S. Jamila, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk, Jamila, about the impact these enhanced unemployment benefits have had on people through the course of unemployment related to the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, these enhanced unemployment benefits have been literally lifesavers. The pandemic has ushered in conditions that have made people really vulnerable to a lot of different forms of economic destitution. People are struggling to get food on the table. They're struggling to be able to pay their rent. They're struggling to be able to pay for basic necessities, diapers for their children, basic hygiene, so many things. And these benefits have helped people who were otherwise going to be facing these circumstances. What they haven't done is driven people in huge numbers out of the labor force. That is just not empirically verified.
Well, on that note, I want to give a listen to one of the governors saying their state will opt out of these enhanced benefits. Going to Arkansas, here's Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson talking to NPR earlier this week.
We don't need to pay people to stay at home when employers are begging for workers. That's the fundamental point. And what we see, employers have job openings at every level, and they have people who come in for an appointment but don't show up for the interview. They recite the fact that they can make more money because they have the assistance at home.
Jamila, that's been, I think, the most common argument for ending the enhanced benefits, the idea that, hey, employers are desperate for employees, they're competing with unemployment benefits. What do you say to that concern?
I say that the data just does not bear out the concern. Really, the concern is exaggerated and overstated relative to what we know. And what do we know? We know that a labor shortage in this country is not a major issue, that in fact, the economy per the last jobs report was down 8 million jobs, that labor force participation in April grew. So more people are going to work. People are not being lulled into some kind of hammock of complacency by unemployment benefits. And we also know that there are reasons, there are barriers preventing people from showing up for these job interviews. Did people not show up for the job interviews because they had unemployment benefits? That's not what the evidence is showing. The evidence is showing they didn't have sufficient childcare. The evidence is showing they didn't have sufficient elder care. The evidence is showing that there are real barriers. And instead of addressing those barriers in people's lives, we're forcing them into destitution. And it really is the wrong solution to the wrong problem. And I would just say that among those who are suffering most to find employment, women and women of color are at the top of the list. That's who this is going to hurt most. Although I will say it will hurt all working people who have been trying their best to try to find employment, but have faced the barriers that I'm talking about.
Talking to Jamila Michener, associate professor in the Department of Government at Cornell University, looking at unemployment benefits in the United States during the pandemic. Some enhanced benefits still out there. A number of states, though, saying they are going to opt out of those as soon as they can in June or July instead of the deadline of early September. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own experiences collecting unemployment, applying for it, or as an employer. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jamila, you were just starting to get into this point. There's the idea that, you know, with the pandemic, we're all in it together, but certain categories of people, certain occupations were hit much harder economically, we know. Who are you seeing taking the hardest hit over the last year?
I mean, one of the things that's really striking and that we've talked about a lot is that women have really taken the hardest hit. And I mentioned that we saw gains in the labor force in April, and we did, but those gains were all among men. And so, you know, the folks, the people who are facing the most barriers to re-entering the labor force are really women who have care responsibilities, who have who are taking care of elderly parents and taking care of children. And overwhelmingly, we also have seen women of color who have really suffered both with being able to have access to employment and with being able to have access to employment that's good, jobs that are good. I think that's a big question here. We want to sort of get people, sometimes the goal is to just get people in a position where they're desperate enough to take any job. And this is an opportunity to stop and ask ourselves, is that what we want? Do we want people abandoning their families and their health to take any job? Or is this an opportunity for us to build an economy that's more equitable and that's healthier for people?
You mentioned childcare and elder care, and we've seen in future proposals from the Biden administration, things that haven't passed Congress, or at least not yet, treating things like childcare and elder care as part of infrastructure spending, an argument whether it counts or not. That said, do you see federal policies that could help tackle some of those care issues that could then help, especially the women you're talking about, get back into the workforce?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the American Rescue Plan, we've seen that the Biden administration has built in this child tax credit. And so that certainly is going to a refundable tax child tax credit that is certainly going to provide relief to many millions of American families. And if estimates have it correct, is going to slash the child poverty rate really significantly. I think that is a direction that we should take really seriously in this country. And it's something to watch, right? I think that there's still a lot of work to be done around thinking about how to support workers like gig workers. They're a part of this that states are pulling back, and they're also pulling back from, for example, gig workers. I think that's a space where we've seen some support in some of the kind of COVID relief packages that have come from the federal government. And that's now starting to dwindle and dry up. And so it's worth looking in that direction, too, to these workers who are quite vulnerable to changes in the economy and who we rely on a lot, but we don't necessarily protect with resources and other forms of support.
I know, Jamila, from having talked to you about your book on Medicaid and federalism, you are very interested in how federal policies will play out differently in different states, depending on how they treat them. This is another example of that, I guess. Do you have concerns about, you know, if you would live on this side of the border, you're getting one thing. If you live on the other side of a state line, you're getting something different?
I'm so glad that you asked about this because it's one of my biggest concerns here. It seems like every day a new state is opting in, Ohio, Georgia, Arizona. And literally, it's just if you live in one of these states that has decided, I don't really like this, you suddenly are going to stop receiving these benefits that may literally be a lifeline for you, your children, your loved ones. And someone who lives in a different place has access to a completely different set of benefits. It's absolutely critical for us to think about whether that is the kind of country we want to live in, where access to vital benefits is arbitrarily dependent on where you happen to live. And one of the things I always think is interesting when I ask people that question in a general sense, they always say, oh, no, no. I mean, we're all people. We all have dignity. We should all be treated with some level of similarity, irrespective of where we live. But when you look at our policy, that commitment is not really reflected in it. And this is such a huge example of that.
We're talking to Jamila Michener, associate professor in the Department of Government at Cornell University. She's with us today to talk about what's behind the Republican push to end enhanced unemployment benefits earlier than planned. They're supposed to run out in early September. Some states moving up the timeline to mid-June or July. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen in Wisconsin? Should we ride it out with these benefits till September or end them earlier? If you lost your job during the pandemic because of the pandemic, what sorts of things are you thinking about as you re-enter the workforce? Have you been able to get back into work? If you're an employer, do you see these enhanced unemployment benefits keeping people from applying for jobs to work for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Jamila Michener of Cornell University, looking at an effort in many Republican-led states to end pandemic unemployment programs earlier than scheduled. You could join in with your thoughts on that at 800-642-1234. If you have received those benefits yourself at some point since the pandemic started, love to hear from you and your experience as well. If you're an employer looking for workers, what are you seeing out there? 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Ray is with us in Milwaukee. Ray, hi.
Hi, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Biden and the Democrats are in control of all, the federal government. They tried to insert the $15 an hour minimum wage into this last bill, and then they hid behind a person I have never heard of before, the Senate Parliamentariat, I think is what his title is. He decided that they could not put the $15 minimum wage in there. Now, when this happened with the Republicans, they promptly fired that person and put somebody in there that would do what they asked. Now, maybe $15 an hour is too high. Let's shoot for 12 an hour. But people, for once, are making decent money with these added benefits. I myself am one of those. But when I go back to my job, I make 20 plus an hour. So I have incentive to go back. But take a waitress who makes $2.25 an hour, and she has to really try to make up the rest of the minimum wage through her tips. The Democrats are spineless on this issue. They should fight for raising the minimum wage, but maybe 15 is too much. Let's start with 12, but let's do it. And this will solve a lot of these problems.
Ray, thanks for the call. Jamila, Ray saying, hey, yeah, the unemployment benefits may amount to more than people get paid at work. His solution, increase the amount people get paid at work. What do you think?
I think that Ray has a great point. And I think there's an even larger point here, which is, we heard that clip of like, well, employers are complaining. And when employers are complaining, the response shouldn't be, oh, okay, employers say jump, we jump. The response should be, well, what's actually going on and what's happening on the part of the actual people who aren't going back to work? And look, you want people to come back and work, make it worth their while. There's a lot more we can do there. And the minimum wage is just the beginning. Paid family leave, et cetera. Is there more the Democrats can do? Absolutely. But let's not let the Republicans off the hook either. This should be in everyone's interest to make it possible for people to work and live humanely at the same time.
Thanks for the call, Ray. We'll go to Matthew next in Marshfield. Matthew, hi.
Howdy.
Oh, what'd you want to bring up, Matthew?
Well, as far as the unemployment benefit thing, I mean, I can understand wanting to help people a little bit more. But when the unemployment benefit first started, people were bringing home $900 a week. I mean, is that really necessary? I mean, I understand now it'd be closer to $700 a week, but that's still, I don't know. It just, to me, it seems too high. And people that do work at McDonald's and stuff like that, like here in Marshfield, I know McDonald's starts off at like $12 an hour. I don't know about a lot of other places, but for the unemployment benefits, it seems like it's too high and people aren't really wanting to go back to work. Now, where I work, we've been working people, and I work in the skilled trade, and we've been taking people with no experience because we can't find people.
Matthew, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew, Jamila, Matthew, okay with some unemployment benefits? He says they've gotten a little on the high side, though, with these enhanced benefits.
I think that, you know, I mean, we all have different perspectives about what the high side is. I think that if folks are taking home $900 a week, the question is, what are the responsibilities that they have? How many children do they have? What kind of rent do they have to pay? What's the cost of living where they live? It's not really possible to just say, oh, $900 a week sounds high. It may sound high. It may be high, depending on what your life circumstance is. But for many, many people, that is, in fact, not high, right? Relative to the responsibilities that they have to take care of themselves. And look, employers that are saying, hey, we can barely find anyone. We have to hire people without skills. Again, the question is, you know, if people are forced through desperation because their benefits are cut off to take these jobs, and now it's easier for employers to find people, but folks are not meeting their needs, that's not really the trade-off either. These things are complex, though, and the exact right amount is going to be really hard for anyone to agree on, right? So we have to really think in terms of what are people's concrete needs, what are the costs of living, and there are actual there are mechanisms for calculating these things, and it may not make sense to people when they just eyeball it. Ah, 900, it sounds a lot. But there's kind of really systematic thought that goes into studying and researching and calculating how much people need so that they can live in a way that is reflective of their family size and a number of other factors.
Thanks for the call, Matthew. We're talking to Jamila Michener from Cornell University, looking at unemployment benefits, some of the pandemic enhanced benefits. They're set to go to September around the country. Some states looking to opt out early. Back to your calls. Jim is with us in Milwaukee. Jim, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm an occupational health and safety trainer, and especially a infectious disease response trainer. And I work with a nonprofit organization that provides training to workers and employers on workplace health and safety issues. And I've gotten none of the money throughout the whole pandemic. I didn't get the first pandemic money. I got none of the stimulus money. My employer has not been able to get any of the PPP money because we can't find a bank that's willing to write the paperwork because we're a small organization and they won't get anything out of it because we'll be able to keep people employed. If we're talking about cutting off the money and forcing people to go back to work, with the amount of variants that we have out there, we're going to be right back into an even worse pandemic by Christmas time this coming year when we think we should be just about over it. We're still in a pandemic. It hasn't ended. Just because we have vaccines doesn't mean that we should give the all clear sign.
Jim, thanks for the call. Among other things there, Jamila, Jim raising health concerns if people are going back to work before they feel, I guess, safe being back at work.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is a really excellent point. It's easy because, you know, vaccination has really started to roll out and many people are vaccinated to start thinking, hey, this thing is over. The CDC yesterday, hey, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. And to get complacent and start thinking, hey, this is over. Let's force people back out into the world. But we still have many, many active coronavirus cases in the United States every day. And we're still grappling with a pandemic. We still have a significant subset of the population that is vaccine hesitant or simply vaccine refusing. And so when we take away these benefits, we also take away some degree of choice that people have about making health decisions that are best for them. I have friends who, you know, worked in places where they decided to stop working because their supervisors were exposing them to health vulnerabilities and threats. And they were able to make those positive choices for their own health and the health of their families because they had access to unemployment. We take that away. We also take away people's ability to continue to protect themselves in a continuing pandemic. So I really do agree.
Time for one more caller. Marcus is with us in Madison. Marcus, hi.
Yes, good afternoon, Ms. Michener. Here in the state of Wisconsin, if your employer calls you back to work while you're collecting unemployment and you don't go, all that employer has to do is call the unemployment division and those payments will be cut off. The same is true if you are given offered comparable work at the same price. So there's a lot of false information being thrown around about this. Almost nearly half the workers in the state of Wisconsin make under $15 an hour. So if employers want people to trot back to work, they'd be happy to if they weren't paid the sub-poverty and poverty wages that they are. Nobody talks about the necessity of work to the inherited wealthy of the young daughters and sons of the wealthy.
So, I got you, Marcus. We just have a couple minutes left. I want to bring Jamila Michener in on that first point in particular. Marcus saying, you know, if you refuse to go back to work, you can lose unemployment. I understand some of the requirements there were waived over the course of the pandemic. Jamila, what kind of enforcement is there right now around the country when it comes to you have to be looking for work and that sort of thing for unemployment?
Enforcement is really variable, and it's also quite tricky, both because of caveats that emerged during the pandemic, but also because the pandemic creates conditions that that make labor difficult and make agencies have a hard time keeping up with enforcement. That notwithstanding, it's absolutely true that there are mechanisms for that. And the second part of what Marcus said is really important too. We don't have to worry as much about enforcement if we have positions that actually pay people what they need to live, because then they will want to go back to work and it will be good for them and their families.
We'll leave it there. Jamila, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Jamila Michener is an associate professor in the Department of Government at Cornell University. She was with us today to talk about pandemic unemployment benefits and why some states are looking to end those enhanced benefits earlier than scheduled. Nationwide, they're scheduled to go to early September. Many states looking more toward mid-June or July. Coming up, the CDC's new guidance says that fully vaccinated people, can safely go out a mask in most public situations, even indoor situations. We'll talk to a doctor about that announcement and where we stand with vaccinations here in the state. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the Friday World News Roundup, including the latest from the clashes in Israel and Gaza. That's coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that in most settings, people fully vaccinated against COVID-19 don't have to wear masks, including indoors. After the announcement, President Biden called it a great day for America and encouraged those who haven't yet been vaccinated to get a shot. So far, about 39% of Wisconsinites are fully vaccinated, and 45% have gotten at least one dose. Also this week, 12 to 15-year-olds became eligible for one of the vaccines. Wisconsin started administering shots to that age group yesterday. We're catching up on the latest COVID-19 news now with a medical expert, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions or thoughts about when and where it's still a good idea to wear masks? Are you concerned about mask wearing, kind of switching to an honor system? Have they been vaccinated or not? You don't know. If you're the parent of someone in the 12 to 15-year-old age group, are you planning on a vaccination? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. John Ohoro is an infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He also works at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He's a graduate of the UW-Madison and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Ohoro, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here.
Well, it feels like a pretty big deal, this announcement from the CDC. What was your reaction to that announcement?
So it was a little bit surprising how quickly this came up for us, since this is something that we've been expecting some de-escalation to happen relatively soon as vaccination rates have been going up, but we have not yet reached that herd immunity threshold that you've probably heard an awful lot about, talked about in the news and other settings. the reasoning behind it is very sound, saying that those who are vaccinated are at exceedingly low risk of having a severe infection, and the risk of transmission appears to be very reduced among those who are vaccinated, so providing some increased ability to go about unmasked for those who have been vaccinated is appropriate, but it's something that is going to have to be taken on a case-by-case basis, looking at a number of different settings. In particular, the notice made it clear that we are looking at this not applying to healthcare settings, so you'll likely be asked to wear a mask when going to hospitals or clinics, which makes sense given the increased risk of the patient population being seen there relative to the general public. Likewise, some municipalities may continue mask mandates, and that will be guided by local vaccination and local trends of cases, and that may also be a very reasonable thing to implement based on local activity.
Some of the most common concerns I've heard raised, sometimes from virologists, sometimes just from everyday folks, is, hold on, I've got kids under 12 who can't be vaccinated, or some people concerned about people with who are immunocompromised. I don't know, how much do you worry about those groups that can't be fully vaccinated, or even if they are, they might be still a little higher risk than everybody else?
That is a concern, and that's something that people are going to have to consider as they approach this over the next couple of months as we see vaccinations continue to increase and case counts continue to decrease. I'm in that boat myself with a child who's ineligible for vaccination, and that's something that I'm going to be having to weigh the pros and cons of specific interactions. But for most people, the main takeaway from this should be if you haven't gotten your vaccine, it's a very good time to go out and consider getting one.
Yeah, that one of the arguments I've seen for this announcement, which, as you say, I think took some people by surprise, was that it was going to be a motivator to get people to get the vaccine and enjoy the full benefits of the CDC announcement. Too soon to tell, I'm sure, numbers-wise, but are you hopeful that that is something that might happen?
Well, I'm hopeful that we'll see our vaccination rates continue to increase. As you said at the beginning of this segment, Wisconsin's approaching the halfway mark for the population getting at least one dose and is in the top half of states in the country that are going with this vaccine rollout. And anything that hurries that along is going to be very welcome news.
We heard from Dawn in Madison, who couldn't stay on the line. Dawn says, if you can go maskless if you have the vaccine, how do we know that others who are going maskless have actually been vaccinated? And I want to give a listen, actually, to CDC Director Rochelle Walensky talking on CBS yesterday about that sort of honor system and personal choice. Here's a listen.
If you are unvaccinated, then you have made the decision to take that risk. And we are really encouraging people who are unvaccinated not to take the risk. People who are unvaccinated should not be taking off their masks. And we're really encouraging them to get vaccinated as soon as possible. But if you have several people in the room and some are vaccinated and some are not, and they've all chosen to take off their masks, it's the vaccinated people who will be protected.
So a lot of messaging there for the still unvaccinated to keep wearing those masks. How important is that, Dr. Ohoro?
Well, that's going to be very important for their own safety, but also for the safety of others. Something that has been true since the very beginning is one of the main reasons to wear masks is to protect others from the potential for spread. And while it is true that vaccinated individuals are at drastically decreased risk for a severe infection, there's a difference between drastically decreased and a zero risk. So unvaccinated persons continuing to wear masks is a behavior that I hope we will continue to see.
We are talking about some of the latest COVID-19 news, new guidance from the CDC, and a new group of people eligible now for vaccines. Dr. John Ohoro is with us from Mayo Clinic. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the new CDC guidelines, your thoughts on it. And for the younger people, the 12 to 15 year olds in your household, and maybe even the 16 to 18 year olds, have you gotten them shots? Are you making appointments right now? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Ohoro, let's turn to that news now. One of the vaccines approved for youth 12 to 15 years old. Can you talk about how we ended up in that decision and what it means?
Yeah, so the FDA was recently given data on the trial for that age group, and most trials, when we start looking at making these vaccines available for younger age groups start at the closest to adulthood and go progressively younger and evaluate different doses and so forth. The 12 to 15 data was very promising, with no cases seen in those who were vaccinated. On paper, that's 100% efficacy, but in actuality, nothing is 100%. But that still indicates that it's highly, highly efficacious, as it is in adults. And the side effect profile was really quite similar to what's been seen in adults, with the exception of a little bit of an increased risk of some fainting after vaccination, which is something that's always seen in that age group anyway. That seems to be a risk of vaccination as opposed to something specific to the COVID vaccine.
And how quickly will we be able to ramp this up? I know we're hitting that magical point now where we've got enough supply, I think, for the demand out there. Does that mean it'll be pretty easy to make this transition and add this new cohort into vaccination eligibility?
That should be the case in most areas. We are exiting the phase where we're really guided by our limits of supply and entering a phase where we're limited more by vaccine uptake and vaccine acceptance. So that's a big part of what I'm sure drove this decision, was that our vaccine rates were starting to plateau nationwide a little bit, and looking at what can we do to try to push more people to opt into vaccine now that the supply is plentiful.
Another part of the whole story here has been this race against a COVID variant that may spread more quickly or may be more hazardous or possibly both. We're seeing that as a part of the story in countries like India right now. What are your thoughts right now on our rate of vaccination versus our fear of these faster spreading variants?
So all of the variants that are common at this point are still counteracted by the vaccine. Some of them have slightly decreased efficacy, but they're still broadly very, very effective. And a rapid enough rollout of vaccine is really our best defense against these variants causing more trouble than they currently are. We are seeing a trend towards younger people getting sicker, but by and large, these are younger, unvaccinated people. So this goes back to the general message of if you haven't been vaccinated, this is a good time to reevaluate.
We're talking to Dr. John Ohoro, infectious disease specialist with the Mayo Clinic Health System, looking at some of the latest COVID-19 news, new guidance from the CDC for fully vaccinated people, saying life is a lot closer to normal for you now, reducing the number of situations where they recommend mask wearing, and now one of the vaccines approved for 12 to 15-year-olds. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this new guidance from the CDC? Is it going to change the way you behave? Do you worry about an honor system for mask wearing, what it'll mean for the pandemic? Do you have kids in that 12 to 15 age group? Are you making appointments maybe right now? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions related to COVID-19 and the latest news. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Dr. John Ohoro, infectious disease expert with the Mayo Clinic Health System, looking at new mask guidance from the CDC and expanded vaccine eligibility. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, I'm fully vaccinated, and I was just wondering, well, if I go out without a mask into a store and I inhale some SARS-CoV-2, which I think is the virus, then I go to another store, might I be exhaling some what could be a full viral load to somebody?
Dennis, thanks for the call. Dr. Ohoro, without actually getting the virus and kind of incubating it ourselves, can we sort of pick it up as a hitchhiker and bring it into different settings?
So it appears that is much, much less likely with those who are vaccinated. We know if you're vaccinated, you're less likely to have severe disease, and there's a lot of evidence suggesting you're less likely to have asymptomatic infection, which we would think is a prerequisite for being transmissible. It doesn't reduce that risk to zero, and that's where there is still some uncertainty in why masks have been requested and required to date and still will be in some areas like healthcare facilities for a while longer. but the overall risk seems low. Moreover, if the other people around you are vaccinated, their risk of getting an infection from you is also very low. So this goes back to the need for people to go out and get vaccinated.
Dennis, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Lee now in Madison. Lee, hello.
Hi. I'm a middle school teacher, and this week was great. I got to see my first students come back, and they came back with the I'm vaccinated stickers on. They're wearing them with pride, and it was great to see, and I've been thanking them because for the last year I feel like, you know, teachers in general have been doing everything they could to provide for them, and now they're doing something to help safeguard us. And just happy to see that. That's all.
And, Lee, I want to ask, paint us a picture of what a classroom looks like in person now with those middle school kids, masks and distancing. I don't know. What's going on?
Oh, it's we have I'm in the Madison School Districts, so we have – at any given time in a room, half of the students are there, half of them are virtual. They are going to be wearing masks. They're going to be 6 feet apart. And I'm teaching in front of a camera and in front of a group of kids and having to kind of juggle that. And I also teach shop. So having to try to illustrate a whole bunch of hands-on activities and computer programming and things like that. There's a lot of, okay, if you're you're on this step, ready for the next step, give me a 1 in the chat. Now give me a 2 in the chat. You know, and breaking things down a whole lot into a lot of steps. But having the kids back has been wonderful. I'm able to reach kids I wasn't able to reach before. And the kids are just overwhelmingly excited to be back.
Lee, thanks a lot for sharing the story with us. Dr. Horro, your thoughts for how we're handling COVID safety in the classroom for, in this case, that middle school age where a lot of the kids could start being vaccinated. I'm assuming most of them not there yet, though, obviously.
Yeah, I think that that story highlights a few things. One thing is it is wonderful to hear that their kids are proudly getting vaccinated and going out and doing that for all the reasons I was mentioned. But another one is that it does take 2 weeks after your second dose, if you're on a 2-shot, or 2 weeks after your first shot before you're considered fully vaccinated. So some of those measures, including masking, still have to be in place, even if you are vaccinated and enough time hasn't lapsed yet. Another one is hearing all the measures that they've put in place within the school district to maintain safety. We're going to see needing masks in some of these settings a little bit longer because, as I mentioned at the outset, this came as a little bit of a surprise to many areas, and deciding where and how to roll back restrictions now that it's allowed is going to take time for officials to work through safely. The CDC is trying to provide guidance for the country as a whole, and we're a big country with a lot of variation, so it's going to take a lot of specific local guidance to work through that, and that's going to require the patience of the general public.
Thanks for that call, Lee, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Dr. John Ohoro from Mayo Clinic Health System. He's an infectious disease specialist there, looking at the latest COVID-19 news, including a new updated CDC guidelines on mask wearing for vaccinated people, a lot fewer situations where they suggest masks for people who are fully vaccinated, and now vaccines, one of them available for 12 to 15-year-olds. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to and questions about the latest COVID news. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Saul is with us in Stevens Point. Saul, hi.
Yeah, hi. I just wonder why the state can't provide certification of vaccination. We already have official records of our COVID vaccinations on the state website, and there seems to be a Republican effort around the country to prevent any certification of vaccination. We do it for other vaccines. I just don't understand what's going on here and how they can let it happen.
Can I ask where you would want to see a need for that? I mean, I know we need to approve certain vaccines for travel to certain places, for example. Where would you want to see something like that used?
Yeah, it's so obvious. I mean, the airlines want to have some way of knowing what their passenger load looks like. And other people that, you know, like in the healthcare industry may require it. but they have to have some kind of formal certification that it was done. And
Saul,
the little
thanks.
Card that you get is not secure at all.
Gotcha. Saul, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. John Ohoro, I think critics of that kind of idea call it a vaccine passport, but that idea of in certain situations you can present proof of vaccination. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, so this particular vaccine is a little bit more complicated when we look at that, and I'm not an expert on all of the legal aspects of that kind of a decision and what that would entail, but one of the biggest complications is the fact that this is a vaccine under a emergency use authorization rather than a true approval like the vaccines that we're used to. And even though it has been very thoroughly tested and the process for evaluating side effects and efficacy has been very open, the fact that this has gone along so quickly does make a number of people uneasy. And that's something that we do have to be sensitive to, because those individuals who are hesitant for those reasons are the ones who are, in my mind, the most likely to eventually get vaccinated and the ones who I want to convince that it's appropriate to vaccinate. And it's important we remember that they have reasons for being concerned about this that are related to the fact that this just did not go through the normal process, even though I will tell you that I am very impressed with the thoroughness of the process it went through and the amount of red tape that was cut to allow the science to advance and get us a very effective and very safe vaccine in the short timeline that these companies managed.
Saul, thanks for calling in. Let's go to Andrew next in Waukesha. Andrew, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. So my question has to do with the science, the effectiveness of natural immunology versus the vaccines. I had COVID back in August. I donated blood. I was tested. I have the antibodies. But none of these guidances from the health departments or the CDC mention people who have the antibodies. So I wanted to know what the science was behind people who had the antibodies and the effectiveness of the vaccine versus natural immunology.
Andrew, thanks for the call. Dr. Ohoro, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the guidance is even if you've had it, and as Andrew does, you've had the antibodies, they're still suggesting the vaccine. Do I have that right?
That's correct. And there was some conflicting guidance about this earlier on, and I'll explain a little bit of where that came from. Originally, there was some discussion about those who had a recent infection and whether or not they really needed to be at the front of the line for the vaccines back in December when we were having more issues with vaccine supply. The thought was that most people who have been infected are unlikely to become infected in the next 45 to 90 days, and thus the urgency wasn't so great. However, what we've been seeing since then is that those who are immunized seem to be at a lower risk for reinfection, and the vaccine-induced immunity lasts longer. Some of this probably relates to aspects of the immune system that go beyond just antibodies, and the vaccine may be more effective in getting an immune response out of some of the non-antibody portions of that. But that still is being studied why that mechanism is. But in short, the reasons why that was originally said had nothing to do with safety or efficacy and everything to do with supply. And now that the supply is resolved, recommendation would be to get a vaccine and that you would get better immunity from that vaccine than you would from a natural infection.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute, Dr. Ohoro, what are you watching for next when it comes to COVID-19?
So the things I continue to keep an eye on are the vaccine rates. As I mentioned earlier, I'm concerned about some of the plateaus I'm seeing in some areas and hope to see those come through, as well as keeping an eye on the variant strains as they spread. It continues to be a bit of a race between the variants and the vaccination, and although vaccines have a edge up at the moment, it's not a runaway at this point, and I hope to see our vaccine rates continue to outpace the variant spread.
And for those people who are, you know, on the fence or just waiting for that convenient moment, I guess, to get a vaccine, what would you say to them now?
I would say that the moment to sign up to get a vaccine really is now. With this shift in here, there is really no choice if you want to protect yourself between you have to either choose to continue to mask for a prolonged period or you have to get this vaccine, given that the general public is going to see less masking in the near future.
Dr. Ohoro, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. John Ohoro is an infectious disease specialist with Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse and at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He talked with us today about the CDC's new guidance on masks and what it's still going to take to hopefully move past the pandemic. And again, hopefully sooner than later. You can still share your thoughts. Are you still going to wear masks even if you're vaccinated? If so, where and when? Tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org.